90.7 FM KPFK. Good evening, everybody. Restless Soul, Monday night, 10:30 p.m. till midnight in studio. With me this evening, my very special guest, Mr. Kenny Bobian. Kenny.
Hey there.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great.
Wonderful.
I'm doing really good. Grooving to your music. It's such a funny experience to be sitting here with the person that's made such, you know, great inspirational music and, you know, just trying to hit those same high notes with you sitting in front of me.
Oh, God, you are funny. But you can do it. Just bring it from your gut. You gotta pull it all the way down from your gut.
I don't know. I don't think those muscles are tight enough, but a little embarrassing. But I'm so happy that you could be with me tonight. Kenny played at Deep, he sang at Deep last night, Marcus Wyatt's party on Sunday night. And why are you in town? Were you here specifically to do the performance last night at Deep, or are you just on vacation? Are you
actually
doing some recording?
I was in San Francisco before I came here. I was working with Ruben Macias and Craig C from the Pound Boy, and I worked on a new project for Devotion Records. And from there, I just came here to do Deep, to hang out with Marcus and Tamara and C and Steve and everybody. Hi, y'all. How y'all doing? But, you know, it was just specifically for that. And, you know, I love the West Coast, so I always end up staying a few extra days anyway.
Okay. Well, I mean, since you brought up the record that you're working on, can you give us, you know, more info about it? What's the song called? Is it complete? Are you going to have to go back and do some more recording?
No, I don't have to go back. The song is completed. As a matter of fact, I spoke with Eric tonight, and he was telling me that they just finished a couple of the mixes. And the name of the song is Share. And there's always a story behind songs that I write. But this song is just simply about situations where you're giving your all to someone and there's no reciprocation. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There must be, in situations where there's a relationship, whether it's in love relationship or family, or there must be reciprocity, you know, because the other person will feel like they're being used or they're not appreciated. So the whole theme of the song is, look, I'm giving you everything that I can give you. Now you got to share your love with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just keep it all to yourself. You're being selfish.
Right.
Basically, that's what the song is about. And, you know, it's a really, really beautiful song.
Okay.
So I'm excited. I'm really excited about it.
And when will that hit turntables?
You know,
worldwide?
I don't want to say any dates, but I think we're looking at November or something like that.
Okay.
But I think the song may end up on my album too. So I don't know. We'll see. But I know that single will probably drop between October and November.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Share. We'll look for that.
Oh, God. I'm just so surprised that it came out the way that it did. But it's a really beautiful song.
Really?
It really is.
How do you actually go about sort of deciding who you're going to work with?
I don't know. I guess it's a vibe thing. It's a feeling kind of thing. And sometimes people, well, most of the time, they reach out to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I'm familiar with their work, you know, even if I'm not, if they present something and I listen to it and I'm feeling it, you know, I'll say, okay, we need to do this, you know, because it doesn't necessarily have to be someone that's known.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've worked with every producer, you know, in dance music. But, you know, it's, excuse me, it doesn't necessarily have to be anyone that's known. It can, if the track is good, you know, if the vibe between us is good, hey, listen, we can do it.
Okay.
You know.
So you're very approachable in that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that the same in terms of new producers, if there isn't a track already laid out, if someone just feels like, you know what, I want to work with you on something from scratch?
You know what? I think, Christy, that has been the force behind my success. And the reason why I say that is because when you're an artist like me that has been doing this for a long time, sometimes, you know, we look for a certain thing because we want to keep that same, I don't know, what do you call it? Because I don't know what they be calling it nowadays, child. But you want to keep that same aura. You want to keep that same. You want people to continuously to see you in that light. But I think the thing that has been the key to my success is that, one, I'm approachable. And you don't know where a hit lies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, they try to act like in this business that, oh, I'm great and I can pick a hit. You know, and I know, don't nobody really know no hit. You know, let's be honest about it. You know, it's if you're going to push the song, you know, if you're going to play the record, if the DJs are going to play it, people hear it long enough, they're going to catch on, they're going to love it, you know. And if it's all according to what you feel, you know.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be a Little Louis Vega, you know, or a Brian Alexander Morgan, you know. It can be a Christy Lomax, you know, or someone who has absolutely no name in this business, and they can really have some hot stuff. These producers that are not known, mm-hmm, be having some hot stuff. Excuse my Ebonics, but they be having some hot stuff. And I think we as artists and even labels, we miss out on a lot of good material because we're too busy running after names,
mm-hmm,
you know. And I think that has been, you know, the force behind my success, because I'm willing to give anybody a chance, you know. So, I don't mean to write a book, but that's basically what, you know, I think. I'm just open, and I think we all should be that way, because you know, you never know where a hit's going to lie. You don't know what's going to be that hit that's going to, you know, take you all the way to the bank. So it may not come from a Louis. It may not come from a Blaze. It may come from somebody who the world has never even heard of.
Well, that's, you know, that's good that you're that open and approachable as an artist, because a lot of people, I mean, I feel like that helps on both ends. Certainly it helps the artist, but mm-hmm, it also, you know, it instills confidence in the producer,
yes,
as well. And
yes,
like you said, it helps to give him a name. It's,
yes,
a two-way street.
Exactly.
So let's, you know, let's go get to your origins, because I don't think a lot of people, you know, I'll speak for myself, you know, beyond knowing you in a club setting and, mm-hmm, dancing to your records for so long, like, I was surprised to learn about your background, you, mm-hmm, know, the Def Con 4 group. So, mm-hmm, you know, let's talk about your place in music. Let's move through sort of to the evolution,
okay,
of dance. But uh-huh, when did music start for you as a full out career?
Career, when I was about 18 years old, and I started doing background vocals. A very dear friend of mine, you know, we were working with these producers called Fly Guy Productions, Cedric Guy and the late Guy Vaughn, who was my friend. He passed away. But they started out, we started out working in their production company. They produced Keisha Jenkins. I don't know if you remember her. She was on Profile some years ago. She did a song called I Need Somebody.
Okay.
And we wrote her second single, Still Waiting, and they were working with Pam Russo and Tana Gardner,
okay,
and people like that. And so we started singing backgrounds on a lot of their material, and we were really good. You know, they were really starting to take notice to us, you,
mm-hmm,
know. And we were so versatile that a lot of times you would listen to us and you would think you were listening to three women. But it was just me and Eddie Stockley, my friend. And, you know, so it kind of developed from there, doing backgrounds with them. And then, you know, the fact that we wanted to do this so bad, you know. And we just kind of made a decision that, look, you know what? If we have to start somewhere, let's start doing backgrounds, you know. We have some people that we know who are friends of ours now, Audrey Wheeler, Cindy Mizell, and people like that, yeah, that were doing backgrounds for everybody back then.
Oh, yeah.
And, excuse me, I said, Eddie, we can do this. You know, we can become known. We can work with a lot of people. And so the first record that really blew up that we did, I think I was about 18 or 19, and, you know, Eddie was younger than me, like a year younger, but we did, and nobody knew it was us at first, but then when they found out, that's when everything started blowing up. There was a record on Big Beat Records called Open Our Eyes by The Truth, and it was produced by Marshall Jefferson.
Oh, okay.
And nobody knew in the beginning, but then they found out that, oh, that's Kenny Bobian and Eddie Stockley. And the record blew up so much, like today it's a collector's item, you know. And so from there, people just started calling us for backgrounds. And we did that session all night. I'm telling you, we were working with Craig Coleman, who is now like the chairman of Atlantic Records now. And we were working with him on a lot of his records with Tara Vonte and different artists that were on Big Beat. So it started from there. And we would work all night and get $150. And we'd be so happy, you know, that, you know, we're
and
professional.
And all night is like 16 hours.
Yeah, all
right?
Night is all night. And they didn't do what they did now. You didn't sing a vocal and stack a vocal and harmonize it and they flew it. You had to sing it all the way down. Through the whole song.
Okay.
So if you stacked, you had to stack all the way down and harmonize all the way through the whole record. So it took, took some time. It was a lot of hard work. And we got our little $150 and $75. And then that's when bigger people started noticing our work. So, you know, when we would get calls for bigger projects, it just started from there. It just stemmed from there.
And that record that you speak of, this is a dance
record. This is a dance record because we were doing backgrounds. We started out doing backgrounds for dance people as background singers. And so from there, we worked with Tin City. We sang on their first album, Foundation. That's the Way Love Is and Suspicious. You know, me and Eddie's on the background of that. Tana Gardner, A Diva. CeCe Rogers.
Wow.
We worked with all of these people, so many people I can't even name. And then it started moving over into the mainstream, and we worked on an album by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. Yeah, we sang backgrounds. There was an album that they had called On the Strength.
Okay.
And there was a song, I know it's going to sound crazy, but there was a song that they did called Head.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And Eddie and I sang background on that. And, it was just uphill from there. And then we started working with Rick Wake and doing backgrounds for Celine Dion, Taylor Dane, and we worked with the Calloways. We worked with so many producers, and we just started doing a lot of pop and R&B stuff. I sang on the Lauryn Hill album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Oh, okay.
Sang background on a song called Zion about her son.
Yes.
Yeah.
The chorus is all gospel.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We were there. Mm-hmm. And just from there, it just, you know, developed a whole, you know, kind of thing where, you know, you need backgrounds done, you know, use Kenny and Eddie and Earl, you know.
Now, did you, I mean, so your initial idea about getting into the music business to sing, it was to be background singers? Like, you didn't want to have your own?
No, I always knew that I would be a solo artist or an artist. I always wanted to do that. But I also knew that it was important to have some chops, and it was important to get in some kind of way. You know, we just had the attitude that we'll do whatever we have to do because we know one day we're going to be stars.
Okay.
And it doesn't care how long it's going to take, we're going to do this. So if we have to start out by being background singers and singing on everybody's records, you know, that's what we're going to do. And through that, eventually, I got approached about the DEFCON 4 situation, where they asked me to be the lead singer for that group on Warner Brothers.
Huh.
Yeah.
I find it interesting, too, that at least back in the day that you were able to make that transition from dance to mainstream, you know, while now we're having that kind of difficulty, you know, doing that again, trying to get the dance records back into the mainstream. It's interesting that, you know, back then the major record labels were peeping what was going on in the clubs.
That's right.
To the point where...
And they still are. They just, you know, it's just not as prevalent as it was before, if I could use a better word.
Sure.
But they still peeping. Please, they know what's up. They know what's up with House. They know what's up. I'm telling you.
In case you just tuned in, this is 90.7 FM KPFK. Christy Lomax in the house with you on a Monday night. My special guest in studio is Kenny Bobien. You know the voice. Now we're trying to get you to know the man. We'll be back with more of Kenny, his words, and beautiful music right after these messages. Seven FM KPFK, Christy Lomax in the studio with Kenny Bobien.
Yes,
listening to a track of his right now, simply called Moody. And let's get back to this conversation about you and the music business. And so it was through your background work that a record label approached you to be the lead singer in an R&B group.
Right. Actually, the producers approached me, Guy Vaughn and David Sanchez, who was a producer at the time. David produced Tony Terry and Sweet Sensation and people like that. And they approached me about doing the group. It was an R&B group called DEFCON 4. I could not believe it when they asked me to do that. And I'm telling you, it was a wonderful experience.
Now, why couldn't you believe it when they asked you?
Because, when they asked me to do it, and they told me that they had a deal on Warner Brothers, and that was one of the labels that I always wanted to be on. You know, come on, they had Prince.
Chaka Khan.
They had Chaka. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I just could not believe that I was going to be signed to a major label. Now, it wasn't a solo deal, but to even be associated with that, I just couldn't believe it. It was just like a dream come true. It was so wonderful, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
Really?
I really did. It was amazing.
How long was the group together?
Let's see. We were together for about, I think, about 5 years.
Really?
6 years, because Guy passed away eventually, you know. Whatever happens in the business, I don't know. They didn't pick up the other album. And so we had decided that I was going to do a solo album. But we had a good time doing Def Con 4. We did a video. We did Soul Train. We did tours. It was wonderful, man. I mean, it was wonderful. And we did good. We really did good.
So you've done the background work. You've been a lead singer in a group situation. Mm-hmm. When did you move to the next level of being solo artist?
Well, that was birthed out of, again, and I don't know, it's something that, I don't want to sound too preachy or, you know, but it's something, God takes a situation that's supposed to be bad and birth something so good out of it, and you really don't know what's going to happen, you know, and he amazes me every time he does that. But I had gotten so depressed by Guy's death. He was my mentor. He taught me everything about the music business. He was my best friend and he was my brother. I was in my early 20s and he was 32 when he passed away. So, and I got depressed and I had decided that I didn't want to do the music business anymore, because he passed away, you know, it was so quick, right in the middle of planning my album, because we were going to shop it, you know, to different ones, but we were just sure that we were going to give it to Russell Simmons to sign to Def Jam. And I got depressed and I called myself quitting the business. And I said I wasn't going to do it anymore. So I got a job and was, you know, I was just depressed behind his death because I missed him. I still miss him today, you know. But I got a call from Paul Scott and Shane Thompson, who make up the production company in New Jersey called BOP, Brothers of Peace. And they asked me, they said, listen, you know, we had an idea to do a remake of an old Sylvester song called You Are My Friend. And when they told me the idea, I said, you know, I really love that song. That song is nice. So, you know, what is your idea? And they said, well, we want you to do a house version of it. And I'm like, well, I'm not singing no more. I'm not doing it. It's like, are you crazy? It was like, look, we will pay you. I was like, how much? So when they told me how much.
The pipes opened
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it was like a work for hire thing. I was like, I could go back in and do it. You know, I bring a few of my friends to do backgrounds and, you know, we'll get it done. Mm-hmm. No problem. So we went in and we did the record, You Are My Friend. And the next thing I know, I was sitting on my porch when it first happened. I was sitting on my porch in East Orange, New Jersey, and this red sports car rode by with the hatch open. You know how the kids put those loud systems. And they was playing this song, and this child was screaming all over the place. I was like, that song sounds familiar. Because mind you, I did not hear the song anymore after I recorded it. I didn't want a copy of it or anything because I was finished with the business. And I heard them say, I said, that's me. They playing me. How did they get that? And the record was out. And that happened a few times. I was hearing it in the clubs. And I was hearing it in barbecues. And I was hearing it on mix shows on the radio. Mm-hmm. And I started getting calls. They reached out to the label. We want to book this kid to do this song. And one booking a week turned into two bookings a week to three bookings a week. And then I started traveling again. And I was like, well, I'll make it. I'll make this money, you know. And the money I was making at the time just to do that song, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll be there, you know. And the rest is history. I mean, it started with that one song. And I just... I guess it was just God, you know. And from You Are My Friend, Stand Up and Shout It was birthed, you know. That was my second one. And then we did Reachin'. You know, I did a song called Just Keep Reachin'.
Okay.
On Jelly Bean. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I did Brighter Day on King Street with Big Moses, which ended up being a very big record for me. And then the rest is history. Then we did Walk Into the Light and Back Into My Life and Rise Above the Storm, and all those great songs, you know, just came out of that.
Now, while you may have given up singing professionally after mm-hmm. DEF CON, you were obviously still singing in the church.
I was singing in church still, because that's where it all came from anyway. You know, I started singing in church with my church choir. Because, you know, actually, you know, my mother told me that I was singing since I was 3. And I remember, you know, I remember some, you know, but she was saying that it, you know, how kids walk around the house singing and, you know, oh, that's cute. She said, no, it wasn't like that with you. She said, we knew that there was something there because at 3 years old, you were singing. You were really singing. And it would just shock everybody. People would just come and gather and say, look at, listen to this 3-year-old boy sing. And she said, I always knew that, you know, there was something special about your music just because of the way you sung at 3. And so church played a very big part in that, because when I went into my hiatus, all I did was sing in church. You know, I didn't want to do really anything else because I was just going through this terrible time. And I just wanted to clench on to God and to what was spiritual and nothing else.
Oh,
7 FM KPFK, Christy Lomax in the house with Kenny Bobian.
All right.
Just heard a track called Brighter Days on the King Street label.
Oh,
an
God.
Absolute classic.
Yes.
Absolute classic.
I'm happy about that.
So you're singing house music, and at this time you're making these club records, the money's good, you're getting a little bit of fame, you're also, mm-hmm. Still singing in the church. What was the how did your congregation or the folks around you kind of accept once they realized that you were doing this other kind of music? What was
It was hard. It was hard in the beginning because the church did not accept the fact that I was fusing gospel and house together at first. Now, the entire church wasn't like that, but the margin that was so wide that didn't accept it, and it kind of made me feel bad too. And but I knew there was something in it. They didn't really, a lot of times people don't like what they don't understand.
Sure.
They were really against it. They were like, really? Oh God, I really went through a lot because of it. But I knew that there was something in it. There was ministry in it, and it was something that God wanted me to do because too many people were being helped. Too many people were coming to me and telling me, and too many people were giving their lives to the Lord, and just, I knew there was something in it, and I had to keep doing it. As a matter of fact, that's how Father was birthed.
Right.
My song Father, was birthed out of that experience, where I was crying and I was like, God, I know you told me to do this. You know what I mean? You told me to. Now, how do I explain to people about who you are? They're asking about you, and I'm telling them what you told me. This is what you put me here to do. And I may not be telling it in an orthodox way that the church people are really used to it, but I'm doing it the way you told me to do it, And I don't know. It was just an experience, but I got over it. And out of that came one of my greatest songs that I've ever written, Father. They won't believe. And they are people that literally ask me that. How you singing about somebody you ain't ever seen before? How you want me to love somebody I can't see? That's impossible. And you have to take time and tell them it's about faith, So I didn't get a wide acceptance at first. Now everybody doing it.
Uh-huh.
Can you believe it? Now the churches are doing gospel house.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you, they took me through and now they want gospel. Child, please.
Well, see, you were the leader. You set the example to show there wasn't no evil going on in the clubs.
I ain't bitter.
No hedonism happening.
See?
Well, there's some hedonism, but you know. There's definitely some of that going on in the clubs. Gospel, the word and the club is a natural connection.
I believe people
have always viewed dancing as spiritual, going to, whether it's deep or the shelter or devotion or whatever the party is in their city. It's a ritual.
That's true.
They come to gather with other like-minded individuals and, you know, share in the word of the music, share in the spirit of the dance.
And some people, Christy, will never step foot inside of a church. And one thing I noticed about Jesus' ministry, who I just try to portray, I just love him so much, is that he taught in the synagogues, but rarely. He always went where the people were. You know, and I believe that that's what he wants from us. They're not going to come to you. Go to them.
And so you do through the music. Well, just, thinking about that, about how people are transformed, especially your music. I mean, your voice is just beautiful on the big sound system.
Thank
you know, that falsetto just moves right through you. It gives you chills. The music transforms the dancers. It transforms all that come into the clubs. I'm just curious, how has the music and being involved in the house club culture, the dance culture, transformed you? We know what you do for us.
Right.
But how has it kind of transformed you or affected you?
Wow. It caused me to understand people more. You understand what I mean? It really caused me to look at it from a different light, that it's not just a career where, you know, I'm making money. But it's a ministry, and it's it just kind of changed my whole attitude about doing music. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where before it's like I'm running after a buck.
Mm.
You know, I gotta pay the rent. I gotta take care of my kids. But it's not like that anymore.
You could see the direct effect of
the
music.
Yeah, I mean,
people
have literally walked up to me when I finished a performance and asked me to pray for them right there in the club. Will you pray for me? You know, your song really stopped me from committing suicide. You know, I've had people walk up to me and say, every day I play your song and it keeps me going. I had one young lady before I came here, I had a performance in New Jersey, and one young lady walked up to me and said, I am so happy that I finally get to meet the man that made I Shall Not Be Moved.
Mm.
I finally met the man that did the Gospel House version of Why We Sing.
Mm-hmm.
She said, those songs brought me through. She said, some really, really tough times, and I just did not know how I was going to come out of it. And I sought help. I sought counseling. I wanted somebody to talk to. And she said, it was those songs, when I put those songs, there was such a surge of strength that came from those songs and the message in those songs. And I just felt like I could go on. And hearing that, you know, and I was in a club, you know, I was in a venue. And, you know, it's house music. And they're playing it on their stereos and playing in their CD players. And hearing that just changed my whole life. And it's like, God, this is ministry. I'm really helping somebody, you know. And it just kind of went from a money making. And don't get me wrong now, I still got to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, it just changed my whole attitude from that to, I got to do this. This is part of my purpose.
Thank you. 90.7 FM KPFK, Christine Lomax with Kenny Bobian. Groove into a track called Father. And this is a track that you can find on a lot of compilations. When this thing came out, you're not kidding, this thing was hot.
Yeah.
This is on, I'm playing this from a DJ Deep compilation that we actually gave out during one of our past fun drives. This is on the Respect to DJ Deep compilation.
Great.
So you can get that there. And, oh my goodness, it fathers on so many compilations. That song is very hot. Very hot.
Thank you, darling.
Before that, we heard a track from Kenny, also called Why We Sing. And I remember I first heard that track. It was at my house, not at a club. Uh-huh. I'd met Jerome Sydenham of Ibadan Records.
Mm-hmm, my boy.
He was here DJing, and I happened to have a bunch of his records at my house. He left some crates there. And so I was just going through his crates, and he had that in there.
Oh, great.
And that was one of those headphone moments.
Uh-huh.
You know, the song just, I mean, I think a lot of your music needs to be listened to on the big sound system, mm-hmm. or just in the speakers where you can just crank the volume.
Right.
It really moves through you. But that song gave me chills, still gives me chills. I mean, it just brings tears to my eyes, as so many of your tracks do. Your voice is very powerful, very moving.
Well, I thank God for that.
Now, I want to ask you about something you said last night at Deep.
What?
Okay. You said up on that stage.
Go.
That's right. Here we go.
Uh-huh.
You said that you were surprised. Like, you didn't ever think you'd be in on the West Coast singing this kind of house music.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of reputation did the West Coast have out there? Why do you think that? Why? What was your impression, or what gave you the impression that L.A. or the West Coast just doesn't get down to this kind of sound?
Well, you know, listen, when I started, when I was doing this, you know, as far as I knew, it was a hip-hop nation. You know what I'm saying? And what we were trying to do, you know, I've had experiences where it's like, no, you're not going to, it's not going to happen in California. They're into Jada Kiss and all these other rappers and stuff, and I'm like, okay, you know, this is like the capital of the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know. I guess it's just the whole, you know, music industry thing. And when the house moved from being mainstream and everything was basically headquartered out here,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what kind of music they were pushing, I had no idea that there was a house scene out here. I really didn't. A lot of us artists didn't.
Mm.
We really didn't, because California was the, you know, the capital of what was going on radio and everything.
Right.
So that's what I meant. I never thought that, you know, I travel the world, but I never thought that the West Coast, you know, would be, you know, one of those places. I never thought that there was a scene here, because that's what was portrayed to me, you know, that
sure.
this is Oscar City. This is Grammy City. This is, you know what I mean?
It is that too, but let it be known. Mm-hmm. Take it back to your peeps.
Okay.
On the East Coast and abroad, that LA definitely has.
Oh, no doubt.
A soulful house, or deep house, or whatever you want to, however you want to mm-hmm. put it. Mm-hmm. You know, we play this stuff. It's not all about the trance and the banging.
Oh,
this is
right.
a huge, huge, you know, community that just loves this kind of music.
And I love them. You guys just treat me so well here. I love you. I really do. Y'all make me want to relocate.
He was talking about that, seriously, about picking up and coming here and putting down some roots.
Yes, I don't tell nobody, though, because I'm, you know. You don't tell none of the producers on the East Coast.
It's on the DL. Well, you know, they could come out here and work, too.
Yeah.
There's airplanes. People fly.
You know how people get possessive and all that stuff, you know. Kenny Bobby, our artist. No. I'm not. I belong to the world.
He's the people's artist.
See?
Something else you said last night, too.
Before you're sure talking about stuff I said. Are you scaring me? Now, what I say now?
Well, last night, while you was up on stage introducing, and you introduced I Shall Not Be Moved.
Yeah.
And you talked about the fact that you might have been thinking about giving this up, if I understood you correctly. And was that tied at that time still to what you were talking about the passing of your...
That was a whole different phase. That was, remember when I was talking about how Father was birthed?
Mm-hmm.
I was going through that situation again, but on another level. You know, where there was a conglomeration of the church people and my family and different ones saying, you know, how long are you going to do this? You know, what is this going to do? You know, and not looking at the effect that it has had. And then I just started looking at my life and just things that I wanted to have accomplished already by now, instead of looking at the things that I did accomplish, you know, and there was a lot of things. And I guess everybody goes through that, you know, where they look at their life and they say, I should have been here by now, and I wasn't there. And I just, you know, say that maybe I need to do something else that's going to get me there, you know, because I don't want to just be a memory, you know, I want to leave a legacy. So... But I didn't, you know, you go through that. And I didn't realize that all these years of recording, that's what I've been doing, leaving a legacy.
Yeah, you said also last night, you recorded 50?
Now it's like 50 singles.
Is this including the one you just did with Ruben?
Yeah.
Okay.
50 singles, and I'm on my third album.
Third album.
Yeah.
What was the first?
The first album was Bless,
okay.
A Gospel Dance Theory on Salmon on Wax.
Okay.
And I did a gospel CD entitled Wonderful, where we did half in the studio, and I did half at a live concert in the church in Newark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a live concert recorded with a whole lot of gospel, praise and worship kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's called Wonderful. It's still on the market. You can get it.
Okay.
It's on Urban Flow Records.
On Urban Flow. And that's available, obviously,
that's available.
On CD. Mm-hmm. As well as Blessed, Kenny told me as well, that Blessed is also an album. I have it on vinyl here, but it is available on CD,
yes.
Soundmen on Wax.
Yes.
Very nice collection of a lot of Kenny's tunes. I mean, this track that we're listening to again, Father, is also on there.
Yes.
We also have on there Superficial People, which is the 10 City track.
Yep.
We have Reach, which is also one of my personal favorites.
Oh, yeah, Carrie Chandler.
How I Feel, Dance for Life. It's a really, really good album. So for those that like Kenny, you have to have Blessed, especially the non-DJ folks who don't have turntables. That's the way to go. So do you also, you minister through your music here, but do you also minister, like in a church, in a congregation? Do you do that as well?
Yeah, I preach. I pastored for 5 years. I pastored a church in North Holy Ground, Tabernacle Church.
Mm-hmm.
And I minister. I have speaking engagements and I counsel people and you know, it's my ministry. It's who I am. It's all a part of who I am.
And obviously that has to be something very different in terms of the people that come to be able to understand your other life.
Exactly.
Which is one and the same, but
it's kind of, you know what it is? I call it, it's kind of unorthodox, you know, from what's normal of what we know as the church.
Sure.
But, you know, I found out that Jesus was the most unorthodox person that walked the earth. He wasn't religious. He really wasn't. And he did things that the scribes and the Pharisees and the teachers in the Jewish sect that he came up under, the Sanhedrin, they called a lot of the stuff he did blasphemous.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus was like, you know, you don't understand. You're never going to reach the people being the way you are, being religious and being religious stuff shirts and not being able to venture out. You got to learn how to change with the times and preach the same gospel. You know, because it's going to help. But you got to know how sometimes you can't be prude. You know, you can't be prude and stuck up and think you're going to reach these people. You have to go where they are. You have to reach them with what they know, mm-hmm. you know. And that's what I believe that's my calling is, and that's what I'm doing. And as hard as it has been, I shall not be moved.
Amen. And what's coming up for you in the future? You're working on the next album.
Yes, I'm excited.
Is that going to be on Salmon on Wax? Or is that your own Kentertainment?
No, that's
going to
be on. No, not on Kentertainment. How you know about Kentertainment?
I do some kind of research.
You better go ahead. All right, Kentertainment, that's going to be hot when we get that together. But we're still in the developmental stages of Kentertainment because mm-hmm. we don't want it to be. But you'll be the first, one of the first to know.
Okay.
But I'm working. I just signed a new album deal with a label called Soul Groove Records.
Okay.
And I'm excited about it. And I'm working on an album now. I'm like 5 or 6 songs into the album.
Okay.
I did a duet with Ann Nesby.
Ooh.
Yes.
No.
Marcus played it last night. You didn't hear it?
I guess I did.
The song that he played right before I came on.
Really?
That was me and Ann Nesby.
Oh, man.
Produced by Masters at Work.
Okay.
And it's a song I wrote called Spread Love.
Okay.
And I'm just giving
but
you a little
But you have
sneak
other copies
peek.
Laying around, right? Like in the hotel room. You didn't just bring.
You are crazy.
You just brought one for Marcus?
I know Marcus listening. I don't even know how he got it.
Okay.
But you know, he Marcus Wise, so he the man. You know, he got the hookup and everything.
Okay.
But you know, it's going to be a good album. I'm excited about it. I'm doing a song also. I ain't gonna say no more about the album, but I'm doing a song that I wrote called My Brother's Keeper.
Okay.
And it's featuring Michael Wofford, Byron Stingley, and Arnold Jarvis.
Shut up.
Yes, it's gonna be hot, boo. You're gonna love it.
No.
Yes.
Way.
And I ain't telling you who else I'm featuring on this album, but
oh,
it's going
to
be a great album.
That is so wrong.
It's going to be a great album, though. We're going to all come out, all of us, everybody that's being featured, when we do the release party here in mm-hmm. California, mm-hmm. we all going to come and fill up your studio that night.
And do some acapellas.
Like, yeah, all of us going to be in here singing for Chrissy.
Okay, we like that.
We're going to teach you a part, too, get you in the studio.
I'll do some hand claps. I clap it.
I heard you singing. You're not bad, girl. You got some pipes and
okay.
everything.
You know, I'm working on the gut. So, okay, so you're going to be doing the... Could you at least say who else produced it? You're working with Masters
yeah.
at Work.
I'm working Masters at Work, mm-hmm. DJ Spinner, Backroom Productions. Mm-hmm. There's going to be like a variety of other stuff on it. I'm doing ballads on this album.
Ballads.
Yeah, it's going to be wonderful. I'm working with some cats out of Philly. You probably heard of Soul Dharma. And just some more people, Blaze, and you know, mm-hmm. people like that. And then some gospel producers. So the project is going to be on Soul Groove Records. Kenny Bobian, and the name of the album is going to be Let's Talk About Love. The Spread Love single with me and Ann, that's going to drop in September.
Okay.
So
okay.
look for the single and the video. So, yeah, we doing video. Girl,
video?
Please, I done moved up in the world.
Kenny, we got about 5 minutes left in the program, and I think it's, you know, only appropriate that we go out with some music. So I'm going to first thank you so very much for taking the time to come down and hang out with me here. And
wonderful.
You know, it was really, really my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
But I also want to give you this opportunity to give some shout outs if you haven't.
Yeah, I got a lot of them. I want to give some shout outs to Rudy and all the people at For Those Who Know. I love y'all, man. Thank you so much. They actually were the first ones who brought me out here.
Yes, they were.
And also, I want to say to my man, Marcus Wyatt, I love you. Thank you. And Tamara and Steve and C and all of you guys at Deep, thank you for having me out here. To Christy, thank you so much. I count it an honor to be on your show. Because everybody talked about how great your show is. And I'm just so glad that you approached me about it. It was wonderful. I want to give some shout-outs to Donna Edwards, who I know is listening.
Yes.
And to my business manager, who's going to kill me, Cindy Edwards. I know. I love you. To my wife, Stephanie, and my 4 or 5 beautiful children. My 4 children and my stepchildren. I'm sorry. Look at me, 4 or 5. I got stepchildren and children. But I love all of you so much. And to all the artists, just everybody here on the West Coast, to Eric and Ruben and everybody over at Devotion and everybody at Remedy, thank you so much. I just want to give a shout out to all of you. I love you. And listen, if I ain't call your name, don't charge it to my heart, charge it to my head.
Kenny Bobian, my special guest on Restless Soul 90.7 FM, KPFK 98.7, Santa Barbara County. Of course, you know, coming up next, it's Something's Happening with Roy of Hollywood. But before we do that, let's hear one more from Kenny. This is the Body and Soul Volume 3 compilation. We're going to get into track number 10, I Shall Not Be Moved.